Hi, my name is Sean Taylor. That's my friend Chris Ford, a.k.a. The Objective Geek. We are Avatar The Last Podcasters. We're going to talk about the Netflix live action season 2. Oh, that's adorable. Live action season 2 Netflix Avatar The Last Airbender. We're going to talk about our favorite characters today. We're going to talk about that very adorable bear who did not make an appearance. Unfortunate. And yeah, but before we do that, Chris, how are you? What have you been up to? You mentioned having some things to share.
This is the first small tidbit. Is that so? I'm constantly, like, throughout the year, just buying Avatar stuff that's on sale for prizes for mm-hmm. trivia. Honestly, I already have enough for next year, and I think I have probably about half the amount for the year after that.
You are my mom, but instead of Christmas, it's for Avatar panel.
But I was on Amazon and I found, like, these stuffed animals. This one, I at first was like, oh, I don't need to keep this one. But, oh my gosh, this thing is, like, I don't know why, but I love this.
Does it make you want to keep it more or less thinking about the future Earth Queen eating him for dinner? Does that make it more or less keepable?
Think more. He's more a dangerous species. also now I have a weird collection of two bear hybrids. Well, no, I'm sorry. Two Avatar bears.
Bears, yeah.
One's a hybrid, but they're both bears. And so it's like, I kind of feel like I need a third one. But the only big one would be a platypus bear, and I doubt they would make a stuffed animal of a platypus bear. And so
that would be pretty aspirational, I think.
Oh my gosh, now I want to see these two characters. I mean, again, he's dead, but and also he's not alive at the same time, but
yeah, he's definitely dead by the time Naga comes along.
Give Naga a bear companion. Look at these. Yeah. But but besides that one, so I bought a bunch of them. I got this box today. It was just like, it's like I'm selling Avatar stuff, which I'm not. But all the stuff was on.
But if you want to buy some Avatar stuff, you can go visit our store. It's at www.lastpodcastersmerch.com. That's not true. Please don't do that.
Imagine if we just use this as a vehicle to sell.
But not even selling our own products, but what do they call it? Like the referral links? Like we just do referral links to Amazon stuff and just scrape off the 1%.
Yeah.
It's all part of my get-rich-slow scheme.
This one I only bought one of because it was the bear and this other one. No, actually, I'll start with the bear, this first one. The bear in this first one was like $6 or $7. So I was like, oh, that's a good price. So here is the otter penguin. I kept it in the bag because I'm not sure I'm going to keep this one. But it does look kind of cute. It looks
awesome. Adorable.
So I got three of those. This one here was more expensive, and so I bought one. Because I thought, oh, I'll buy that for myself. But I'm not sure if I'll keep it for myself. That's why it's still in the bag. It's a turtle duck.
That's stinking cute. That might be my favorite one so far, other than Bosco. It,
yeah, I am considering keeping this one and just not buying another one for trivia. It's okay.
It's just as a reminder, coming into our trivia event is free. I just want to remind you.
I know.
Any person can walk in the door for nothing.
I already had this somewhere. Oh, no, I don't have this one. But I had it last year at trivia. This was like $5.
Looks too content. That's no cabbage merchant of mine. He looks too, like, his life's going too well. He's not lost a cart in a while.
And then I also bought, I don't need to grab them, three posters from Ross. In a similar kind of deal like this, that's in like a very good frame and clear and stuff. Those were like $12 each. So that's a good little price. Like I said, I think I have enough with Nets, at least a year and a half of trivia.
If you let Planet Comic Con know that, they maybe just get us booked in advance, like, all right, go ahead and put us out for the next 3 years. We're already invested fiscally. Hook us up.
And if I die before then, Sean, just say, hey, Chris has his bots of Avatar stuff.
I'll show up at your house. Your family is all there in mourning. I'm just like, hey, can I have the box of stuff? Because I need it for the con. And if you see any sheets of paper laying around that look like they had trivia questions on them, I also need those. It's probably by the box, if I had to guess. It's probably near. Yeah, you know what? I'll just go look myself. Don't worry about it. You guys just keep mourning.
You guys just keep mourning.
So my week is getting a little too personal, but it's a nice segue. So unfortunately, my wife's grandfather passed away peacefully. He had not been well, but peacefully, and his children were there, and you know, like as good as you can hope for. Heather is a funeral director. And so the way that she expresses grief and stuff doesn't always make she's a very sensitive person, in the nicest way. She's very emotionally, emotionally savvy, good emotional intelligence. So you would think like, oh, she probably expresses grief in normal. It's like, no, not necessarily always. I made her a cake today. I was like, listen, I know that we don't always like sit with these things and process like, you know, like other people might. And maybe it's because we don't need to. But just in case, I made a cake and there's some Coke Zero and whiskey over there if you need it. It's just if you want it. And she laughed and that was the response I wanted. And the cake was pretty good, too. So 2 out of 2. But listen, grief is different for everybody and it doesn't go away quick. Usually like the 1 year anniversary is when people say, if you've lost anybody in your life recently, I don't know if you have, but, grief is different and weird for everybody. So Chris, if I show up at your house to take your stuff after you die, that's my way of processing that grief.
I also wonder, I have somewhat of a plan of like, all right, I don't know if my kids or my wife wants to keep all this stuff down here. So I listen, contact these two different places in town and maybe one place in Lawrence. And I think they can buy the stuff from y'all and like buy stuff. But there's some stuff that I want to keep, like just keep it no matter what. Like Gamers HQ is getting back into doing collectibles and stuff. So like, all right, call them. There's this Jayhawk coin collectibles store. Mm-hmm. Like they're pretty good. And there's a store in Lawrence called
Game
Mockingbird Lane.
Oh yeah, no, 2019 Mockingbird Lane.
Yeah,
they
love
always,
that store.
They always have booths at con too, actually.
Oh, okay.
We've
like it may like also be interesting. And maybe they will just like be like, yeah, I'll take the whole thing for 15 whatever, and we can bots it up, and then they'll charge probably $2,000 to do all the botsing up and stuff. But or just keep it all.
I don't have it in writing, and I probably should, because I feel like there's enough crap down here. And I just want to be like, all right, just, like, take a bunch of pictures and throw it on Facebook Marketplace, and just, like, I'm going to take offers for a week. Throw out your best one.
Yeah.
Or, you know, CamCube. I don't care. I don't think Cam... In the year, you know, whatever year his little fingers start working on Switch controllers, I think by that time the Switch will already be like 15 years old and it may not interest him. But, yeah, I don't know. I always thought it would be cool before we had Cam. I always thought that would be a cool way to for a cool charity thing, right? So if we had no kids, like, all right, do exactly that, but with the highest bidder, but it's like just a charity. Like, all right, when you get the bid, and they contact you, and you just Venmo your charity and show us the receipt, and then, you know, make sure it's processed. And, I thought that'd be cool. But now I got a baby. I won't deprive him of my
riches.
Selfish, hoarding, stupid riches. But,
yeah.
Yeah, anyway. Chris, enough about people dying. Let's talk about people living on our TVs.
Yes. Yeah, so today we're talking about our top 5 favorite characters of the Netflix show season 2. I still have another tidbit to get into. I can get into it after.
Oh, crap. Nope, sure. I forgot.
Oh, okay. All right, fine. All right, so the tidbit was Aaron Ehaus, as you may know, is the head writer, was the head writer of Avatar The Last Airbender. Mm-hmm. He was like head writer. And he recently had a little quick review of season two Netflix. And this was his review. And I find it very interesting. Also, he's kind of been on Twitter a little bit more lately. Like, he had a question about Korra, and I cleared it up. And then he was like, oh, this explanation makes a little sense to me. But anyway.
you come back for more advice.
Yeah, you want me to tell you how the Avatar universe works? Please.
Come on back.
So, he wrote, I finished season two of Netflix Avatar Last Airbender, and I loved it. It had the spirit and heart of the original, and even tightened up a few critical story things, if you ask me. Many lovely character moments, and the cast is wonderful. That's just what he said right there. But then people, because it's internet, commented on it and disagreed with him. So a point of, like, rudeness, and also, like, kind of like, it's the internet and it's dumb. But I'll read some of my favorite ones. One person wrote, one thing I wrote to him, I really find what they're doing with Iroh and Zuko really interesting. This is an Iroh who isn't fully formed yet, but he and Zuko are both going down this parallel road of redemption simultaneously, but Zuko is taking the detour at the moment.
I agree with that part.
Yeah. Well, he said, well said. I totally agree. So that's just a little snippet. But it's just really interesting to see the head writer of Avatar, like, see his perspective on the Netflix show, especially compared to, like, fans. But one fan wrote, gosh, they were, one fan wrote, oh, that one's not that interesting, but I'll read it anyway. One fan wrote, I miss Iroh singing Leaves from the Vine, even if we have the music. Toph is someone else, too girly, too stupid. The real one will never have listened to her mom, Bossing, say, not blind. I don't know what this person's writing, but Aaron wrote, respect your opinion, or respect your POV here. I would have liked to hear the lyrics too, but appreciated the music cue. But for Toph, maybe you're right, but also there's a nice parallel to Zuko here. Here, we all want approval, even from problematic parents. It's a neutral vulnerability, just my opinion. So that's really interesting. One person wrote to him, you have to be trolling at this point. You're literally shitting on your original work and downplaying it to defend an objectively bad adaption. Man, that's kind of reputation damaging. Again, the internet is dumb. This person wrote, Aaron wrote, not downplaying it at all, but the OG wasn't perfect. And I see things they improved on, and I'm okay to admit it and enjoy it. But you're an unserious person to argue with if you think it's objectively bad, like you have some hard science behind your argument. that's kind of funny. Hmm.
That's a well-placed response.
Yeah. And one person wrote, kind of wish we could get an unbiased opinion. You were an authority on Atla, but you also had a long working relationship with Netflix. Ain't no way you can't find some of the dialogue and changes unnecessary and cringe, like forcing the cactus juice lines and other iconic moments. And Aaron wrote, honestly, if anything, my bias is that I know how hard storytelling is and the compromises and choices that go into it. And this team made strong choices that honor the original and its spirit, but also sought to give a new life. The cast breathed their own lives into it. He liked the Painted Lady stuff with Blue Spirit. He said a cool hint of forbidden Zutaran fumes. I do think Aaron was more Zutara than Mike and Brian, because Mike and Brian have never been Zutara ever.
Yeah. Whereas as a head writer, you can see how he would want that that smoke burning.
Yeah. A person wrote, loving that show is a little disingenuous, especially having worked on the original show. I don't think it's awful like some more woke critics, but let's not pretend it's great. And then Aaron wrote, I mean, don't get me wrong. I'm glad people love the original and see it as the gold standard, but maybe comparing it makes it harder to enjoy this on its own for what it is.
Might be the wisest thing he said yet.
one person wrote, What did you think of Iroh's arc? I thought it was handled with great care and maturity. Something I think they actually expanded upon, where the original series has it happen before the actual story began, actually addressing the true depth of his actions, his grief, and regret. Aaron wrote, I agree, and I like where it's going. In the anime series, we gave Iroh a free pass on some of the stuff he has to face. On some of the stuff, he has to face it more directly here.
Having Zhang Zhang be kind of responsible indirectly, yeah. I thought was one of the singular, like, best one-bit changes of the show. That was the what was the 43rd group? I can't remember the name of it from the first season.
41st division.
That was the season 2 moment for me. That was like, that was a great change. The Zhang Zhang bit, the change that hits.
Yeah. Another person wrote, I agree. How do you think they tighten things in terms of the story? Aaron wrote, he missed the desert, but he understands why they had to cut it. He did not miss the drill or the guru. That's interesting. Huh. I do think the guru was missed. I found that one interesting. Like,
okay, well, let's... Man, the guru is missed, but in the way that they're handling the Avatar state right now, he's not as important, but it's also, I don't like the way they're handling the Avatar state as much right now. So, yeah, I missed the guru.
Also, I want to say that I think it's fine to disagree with Aaron. No matter what level of disagreement, one thing, just keep it respectful. Don't be like disingenuous and stuff.
Disagree with points rather than making broad sweeping statements like you feel this, and well, and it'll even be like eloquently worded, so it'll be like, well, you feel this way, which means that you're this. It's like, can't you just be like, hey, you feel this way and this is why I think that that's wrong, rather, I don't know, people are so big with their
this is why I think I disagree with the most, because I think this scene is one of the worst writing Avatar. He later goes on to say, when the gang breaks up in episode 6, it was so well set up and a tragic, beautiful character driven.
Yeah. That to me, the cringe line from earlier too, that I do agree with. Again, I don't remember if that person worded it respectfully or not. But there's some rough dialogue and some rough acting of that dialogue. And this scene is like the best example of that all in one place.
I think I get the sentiment of get the characters at a really low point, right? Because every single, no matter if it's the hero's journey or whatever, the characters always reach a certain low point. And for them this season, that was the point. To me, I would have gotten that sense if the scene was half as long.
And better. It's an important, it's a super important conflict in the way that they have chosen to tell the story. It is a necessary conflict. That could have been done better.
Yeah, I agree.
In my opinion.
One person wrote, "Nom, brother, LOL. Literally butchered characters and arcs and story moments that are huge. Doesn't even compare." Aaron wrote, "I think that's harsh. I literally can't even guess the moments in the original you think they butchered, and I probably wrote them." I find that
kind of a funny response. Yeah, I'm glad he's taken a, I don't know if lighthearted is the right approach to it, but he's taken a creative approach in his responses, and I appreciate that.
Yeah, a couple more. One person wrote, "They removed and changed critical plot points and recharacterized damn near everyone." And Aaron wrote, "I thought they made good choices, and they stuck the landing better than we did, in my opinion. Aang getting shot was a manifestation of his character and Azula's in a way that sets up his season 3 and supports deep themes of the series."
Half agree with parts.
Yeah. One person wrote, in a polite manner, "God bless you for saying all of that, Aaron, especially with all the toxicity going around on this site concerning the season. Glad you gave the season the thumbs up approval." Aaron wrote, "People have lots of intense feelings about Avatar. I get it. I found lots of joy in meeting in the season." And those are all his comments on it. Go ahead.
I don't know how, but this reiterates to me the need that somehow, you know, we've kind of got the next couple weeks sort of lined up, but somehow, and when we have some space, we do need to revisit this with, you know, these sub episodes that we tend to do, you know, breaking off favorite episodes, favorite characters, things like that, to allow me to process it different. Because I will say that as I'm going through it again with my wife, I'm liking it less, but I need to let it sit. We need to have these discussions. They always tend to open my, maybe not change my opinions, but you present things in a way that I haven't thought of before, and that's always good. And I look forward to that, to the continued, like, revisitation of the season two from different angles.
I do think one day, I think we might consider reviewing each episode the same way we review, you know, Avatar and Legend of Korra, and it'll be interesting to see where our ratings come out at.
I think it has to be when it's done.
Oh, done. Yes, I agree. Yeah. Which, yeah, I'm not pushing for it right now, but yeah.
But, like, right, just to be in, like, the same fair kind of ballpark as we had. Whether or not that's, like, a great rating mechanism, I don't know, but it's like, no, that's how we did then, that's how we should do this one, but... No, I look forward to the continued different angle breakdowns to help me develop my thoughts and feelings. But thankfully today, and I think this is a good thing, I had a lot of fun thinking back on the positives in how they related to me picking out my favorite characters. It was mostly me thinking about the parts of the season that I enjoyed and why. So that's good. I do think I interrupted you earlier as you were finishing up an Aaron Ehas thought, though.
I think my main... I don't know what my point was, but... Nope,
sorry.
No, it's fine. Actually, I don't think I had any thought, but now I have a new thought. adaptions are adaptions for a reason. There are things that, you know, animation can do clearly better than what live action can do. But it's an adaptation. Like, it's gonna zig when you're expecting zag. It's gonna offer new lenses to see these characters, and that's been a lot of my enjoyment of watching these episodes.
As much as I always say that spoilers aren't really important, there's no recreating watching something for the first time, especially in an age where anything short of brand new, even if you're watching it for the first time, you're probably pissing through every season of it, you know, in a month or a weekend or whatever. There's something different about the anticipation of watching season two, knowing what's probably, or like what we expect to happen based on this in season three, but not knowing what's actually going to happen. There's no replacement for that feeling. That's pretty cool.
Yeah. For some reason, this season felt the most like watching Avatar for the first time. And like, that's impossible. Like, if I could... you know, and I love Avatar so much, I wish I could rewatch it again for the first time, but that's impossible. I watched it 20 something times now, but this season gave me the closest feeling I had since watching the first time of watching the show for the first time. And I think that was a really cool feeling. For some reason, season one didn't do that for me. I don't know why, but this season did.
I think I probably had a little more of that feeling from season one, like coming out of the gate premiere, but I wonder what that is. I got that more with like finishing up Korra, right? Like got through Last Airbender and then got to catch like the last season and a half of Korra pretty much live.
Sorry. Yes.
And that was that was cool in the moment, even if delivered in an unfortunate way. Sorry, poor Nickelodeon. Not poor Nicola, poor Mike and Brian. But, yeah. Chris, that feels like as good a segue as any into our favorite characters.
Yes.
Excellent.
I am ready.
Great. So we'll snake it. We'll go back and forth. I like it when you do your number one first. You get the first big reveal. So that means that you should do the odds first. I'll do the evens first. We'll do the honorable mentions when we're done. And we're snaking. And it's going to be great.
My number five. So last week I was looking at my list and I was laughing at it. And I don't know. I don't know if the more times I watch it, this will be true. But this was one of the most enjoyable. Gosh, it's weird to have this character here. Nonetheless, my number five is Psy the Mechanist, a.k.a. Danny Pudi, a.k.a. Abed. And he wasn't even in a lot, but just that one scene, I just freaking love and crack up. And this is almost nothing to do with the show. And it's all just pure community, Abed, and I loved it.
Good. You watched the show to feel joy, and he did that. Chris, my number five, yeah. I also put the Mechanist, but then in parentheses, I did put, if you make me be serious about somebody who appeared in more than three episodes, my number five spot would be this other person who I'm not going to reveal because then that kind of reveals other things. So my number five, okay. Also the Mechanist, he represents to me some of the like much needed larger charm of the original series. A little bit kind of compressed down into like Aang in the Netflix series is not as charming or as upbeat, and we don't get as much fun Aang interaction, blah blah blah. Long story short, Sokka and the Mechanist kind of carry that burden of handling the lighthearted and charmness, and Psy does great. Number five.
Yeah, no, that's a really good point of bringing that humor to Avatar, and he's not like, wow,
it's not stupid. It's timely.
Yeah, it's funny because it feels like a big. I feel like because season one, he's a little more, he's more serious.
It's strictly just like bad writing, those moments, and he overcomes those with so much great interpersonal chemistry. He really delivers. I don't even know that he is an amazing actor, but I think that this actor did really good with the role he was given, and he kind of carries the spirit of Sokka better even than, well, not, I don't even say I was surprised, better than he even did in season one. They're like, we saw growth from this guy as an actor and from Sokka as a character, and that's cool, and that his bad moments were not the actor's fault. Just weird narrative or just weird dialogue choices. Mostly.
So, yeah.
Number three, Sokka. Chris, my number two and one were the hardest to decide, so I'm going to say one. This can't give the other way, and that's fine. But my number two, I did Long Fang. This is of the two best changes to this season, the two best improvements that are better than the original. Long Fang is one of them. I don't necessarily like the way that the other characters, like I think I mentioned, you know, I think it's a way stupid the way that like Azula describes it and stuff. But like, no, he is not just some like close by hands on advisor. Like, no, this is a master manipulator. Like, this guy is 100% in charge by his own designs. And he's great at controlling that puppet. And then the actor whose name I forget and I feel bad, he is clearly one of the two best serious actors in this show at this time.
You know what's interesting about that? So me and my daughter are kind of on this Christopher Nolan binge for some reason.
Cool.
We watched The Dark Knight 2 days ago. And the, you know, Lau in The Dark Knight. Mm-hmm. The Chinese businessman, that's him. Mm-hmm. That's the same actor. And like, I was like, holy crap, he looks so much younger. And I forget that, oh yeah, The Dark Knight came out almost 20 years ago.
Yeah. 2008? What are we talking, 7?
Yeah, yeah. 2008.
Yep, we're old. Xbox 360 just turned 20. Wild.
Interesting enough about that actor, so I recently watched Mortal Kombat, which I actually kind of love, the most Mortal Kombat 2. And he's in that movie. I don't really like him in that movie. He plays Shang Tsung, And Shang Tsung is like, the actor who played Shang Tsung before just has so much charisma and so much like evilness in him that this Shang Tsung is kind of more conniving. So for me, it didn't work for Shang Tsung, but to me here, he works really well, and he has enough like his face looks plausible enough to believe, I guess, or like he comes off pretty well natured.
He is believable in his role as the confidant. And then at the same time, when he flips the switch, he's believable in his role as this, this conniving, devious mastermind. We're bought in. He's great. I love the actor. I love the changes. I don't even remember, like, all the other characters for the most part, barring maybe my number one, I can look at it and be like, oh, well, this, like, when I was doing my list, like, well, this part was kind of awkward. Was that them? Was that writing? Is that weird? I don't even know if there's a spot with him where I was like, oh, that was weird. It's like, nope, every time he's on screen, just felt right. Felt like him.
Yeah. His name is Chin Hun, if I'm pronouncing
Chin
that right.
Chin Hun. Good work, dude. I'm a big fan. Yeah. Glad you're here.
All right. My number two, which probably surprised me. It might just surprise me because I feel like this actress really got a lot better. And part of it might be bias. I'll explain why there's bias there. So my number two is Princess Azula. My bias is that I think the actress changed her voice slightly to sound more like Grey DeLisle. And again, like I said, that's bias, but I feel like it's better if I own up to it. But not only that, but I think her character, she acted better this season. I think her character, she changed something where, I don't know, she was just more believable in this role of Azula. Her strategy for infiltrating Ba Sing Se is, I think, actually an improvement over the original, that she took a general captive and like that got her buy-in and stuff. And then even in the original, I buy it completely, that Azula's just, you know, sheer intimidation scared the Dai Li into following her. But slightly more believable is Azula just killed all the generals. And it's like, well, hey, you have no army and anything. And also, I am bringing in my army at the same time. So I buy that and everything. I mean, like I said, I buy in the original as well. Mm-hmm. But one thing about the Azula that I find really interesting, that is different from the original, is that this is a Azula. I'm not saying it's better than the original, but this is an Azula who is a little more conflicted. Like, when she doesn't kill Zuko, even though she feels like she, you know, she's in a point where she could kill Zuko. Even they started off with it, she's like, I'm going to kill Zuko. Like, this is Azula that slightly cares, because she slightly had that love from her mother, right? Like, in the original, we kind of, sometimes we make fun of that, Ursa said goodnight to Zuko, but didn't say bye to Azula when she left that night. But, I don't know, just something about that little girl screaming for her mom when her mom was taken, that the original Azula wouldn't do that at all, but this Azula does. And also this Azula, like I said, she kind of cares a little bit for her brother. Like, it does not help her at all to have mercy on Zuko, but she does. She's like, just do whatever you want. Like, and then that, you know, that final mother dying, the final dying mother's wish. Like, if she's not open to that, having any type of inkling that she cares about Zuko, I don't think Zuko takes that chance, even with the Dying Mother's Wish. But with the Dying Mother's Wish, with Azula sparing him, it's very believable that he will fall in line with her, which I think sets us some great stuff for season three. I think I think Zuko's going to be the first domino that falls, and his betrayal to her is going to be what drives her into madness. Because she's like, listen, I was a good big, like, I gave you everything you needed, like, and everything you wanted. Like, we could have shared all of this, and instead you threw all that away. Like, it's another kind of rejection. So I think they're setting up a lot of great stuff. I think the actress did a really great job. And I'm pretty long-winded now. I have to blow my nose.
Hi, Chris is mute. I can offer a rebuttal. No, I love the new family dynamics. I think Azula is the new royal fire family dynamic. I think is better. I think Azula feels more like a kid in this one in those ways, like a mastermind, like a prodigy kid, but having internal conflicts and things like a kid would have. And I think that's great. I'm kind of 50-50 on the little jail cell scene and the way that played out. I think there was a simpler path to being the Kyoshi warriors and getting in and then still killing all the generals, which is cool. And I really want her to do that because that was cool and demonstrative and made a good point. Chris, I will subjectively agree. I do not like this kid's delivery of Azula's lines. It's this, and I've already said it before on record. There's too many actresses and actors in this season whose delivery is just that kind of like flat, emotionless, trying to be serious. And I get it, but for me, it's just not interesting, the delivery. I don't know why it just isn't, but I really like 90% really enjoy the way that Azula's character is written in this.
That's it. Part of it could be biased. I think she's doing a better job of Grey De Lisle impersonation.
I think she's better than the first season. In season two, I think she's better than season one.
There's one line of hers that I just thought, this is way too long. And we mentioned before, but she talks about the parable of the two dragons.
Which, again, not her fault, right? That's just bad writing.
Yeah, like, just shorten this up and just tell me small dragon, big dragon, so I can follow this story without taking myself out of the story.
That just too much calm, cool, collected, I don't know, broody attempt at being that delivery. Both Zuko's girlfriend. Zuko, find a girlfriend with a personality. Good Lord. Although it's a shame because I really like the one from the farm. She just did the delivery again. Anyway, I really enjoy the vast majority of how Azula's written here and how she and how that character evolves. You go ahead with your number one. Yep.
My number one. Gotcha. Okay. My number one, it's Zuko. I feel like this is one of the bigger changes for a character, right? I feel like the original one, and every person who's watched Avatar is like, Zuko has the best character, has the best redemption arc of all of fiction. That's what oftentimes people come away with. And I feel like this show is not going for that. I feel like this show is going for a Zuko. Like, if you, because I love analysis, if you, like, chart it off, like, on a graph and by, like, episode where their goodness to badness is at, right? Mm-hmm. Like, Zuko in the original is like, if badness is right here and good is right here, Zuko in the original is, like, down here in season one, right? And then in season two, he's kind of a little bit closer. And at the end of season two, he's way down here. And then season three, he's up here. And then he flatlines there. While this Zuko, I feel like it's like he has a shorter range. He's like bad, and then he does something good in season one, even if it's like slightly for not good reason. And in season two, he's kind of like ping-ponging back and forth on that line. And then now at the end of this season, he kind of goes down. But his reasoning, I think, isn't, oh, I can finally get my honor. His reasoning is, it's not that temptation of getting his honor that Azula whispers in his ear. His reasoning is, my mom told us to stay together. and whatever that goes with that. And so he's a character who is hard struggling doing, I think inherently he is a good person and he is struggling doing bad. And so this is a character who toes that line more. And it's almost a more, I think it's a more realistic character because people often aren't that huge shift, that huge range that, you know, the cartoons are good. Again, I'm not saying it's better in this version. The cartoon is, like, it's the greatest character, one of the greatest redemption arcs of all time. But I respect that they are going a different route. So this is a Zuko who is struggling to do right and wrong, or struggling between doing right and wrong. And that's a little bit more relatable. I think the actor does such a great job as Zuko. I think he's definitely one of the best kid actors. I say kid actors. All of them are like, except for A, like at least 18. They're somewhere between 17 and like 25 or something like that. Yeah, great. He's doing a great job as Zuko.
So Zuko was my, in parentheses, number 5. And my only notes there were just, there were just a few, I'm going to call them nitpicks. Kind of the same as I might have had with Soccer Tough. There's a few like rough edge kind of delivery things. I think, like you mentioned with Iroh, they're taking a big risk by treating Zuko and Azula and their relationship differently. I think it's a good risk to try to take and tell a different story. And I think this guy is generally a good actor and puts on this. He does emote. He probably emotes more than animated Joe Zuko, and that's important to me. He feels like a teenager going through some tumult. But there's some rough bits that kind of stick in my brain that, like I say, I have him number 5, still very high up my list. My parentheses 5. He did great, and I generally like the changes that they're making right now, and it feels, what's the word, like tangible. Feels tangible. Feels real.
Yeah.
My number one was Iroh. I think when I talk about Long Fing, I think there's two actors that feel like the best overall acting quality actors in the show. I guess maybe Ozai, what's his name? But I think Iroh's actor does a great job and delivers a really powerful performance that, to me, is like the emotional backbone of the story so far. Isn't so much Aang yelling at people and looking for his sky bison that we barely see on screen at all. The emotional backbone of this show is this different way that they're showing the horrors of war through these Iroh conflicts and through these Iroh confrontations. And it feels so satisfying to have this character we love get this treatment that he kind of deserves, right? He deserves this big arc, and he's delivering. And like I said, that moment with him and John Chong is probably my favorite individual moment in the whole season. Not the whole series, because I think my favorite moment in the whole series was one of Iroh's moments from the previous season. I just think he's doing a great job with a role that would probably be like the most scrutinized role of the show if it was done poorly. He's killing it. I think he's doing great. And I like the changes, baby. It's so validating, yeah. Chris, when you and I talk about Iroh, and we love Iroh because of this journey. It's so validating to see that journey like on screen now. Like, yeah, that's how good of a journey it is. We should see that.
Yeah. Gosh. Yeah, the John Jong Iroh scene of like, hey, I got beef with you. You should have beef with me because your son died under my watch because I abandoned my station and I did not have a proper... Funny, because I don't really think about those things, and that's what this show can do. Like, I don't think about, like, all right, if you are retreating, you had to have a plan of retreat or people might die and stuff in it. And John was like, no, I just left my post and your son died as a result of that.
That's...
And then Iroh was like,
the coolest possible way for two grown-ass men to ask each other for forgiveness.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's funny, because John says, like, the Dragon of the West would burn me alive. Like, what is this old man
and he
do?
Says it so One factually, thing, that, so confidently.
Like, yes! So factually, that the Dragon of the West would burn me alive.
I know, because I've seen it.
Like, wow, like we're getting a real big look into Iroh and his past behavior, atrocities, things like that, which I'm not, you know. Yeah, I love Iroh.
Those
I love
are the
also
things that this show can and should do different. Those bigger. I say it should be a dark, brooding mess. I'm just, those are the more extreme, potent things that we should be able to see in this show that you can see while they didn't do it in a kids' animated series. That should be like the underlying theme of here's our main line of opportunity to tell a bigger, more mature story. Not bigger necessarily. Bigger.
It was funny is that I could, so I've had this thought, and I had it for a couple years now, about just the importance of adaptions for franchises or IPs. Like Batman has been around like 85 something years, and he's had countless adaptions, and what's kept him alive and well and thriving is those different adaptions. Is that a person could watch something and something from that one adaptation cling to them and be with them forever for the rest of their lives. Another person could watch a different adaption and cling to something else. Like, I still get in arguments today with my mom. She's like, Adam West is the best Batman.
That is the worst possible answer.
I'm like, no, Kevin Conroy is the best. And John, our friend John, would be like, no, Michael Keaton is the best. If we're talking live action, I would say Christian Bale is the best. And all these Batmans are different, but they all provide a different lens or a different avenue to view these characters. And I was thinking about Avatar. It's like, if you really want Avatar to survive the test of time, it's going to need to have different adaptions and different stories, different mediums. It's going to have to expand this way, going to expand that way. Some of those ones you might not like, but don't be mad that they're just changes. They're changes because it's an adaption, right? And Iroh is probably one of those biggest adaptions. Oh, my point was, like, one day they might make a musical that's going to have different stuff in it. One day they might make an anime, like real straight up anime adaption of it. It's going to combine some of the best things of the live action.
It would honestly, some of the it would great make a pretty cool anime if you just think about the type of drama and the fights. Like, yeah.
But yeah, like Naruto, when Naruto talks about, I know you've never seen Naruto, but Naruto talks a lot about war and how like how much war changes people and defines people. And what does it mean to be a real ninja or a real man in war? Like, the live action Avatar is exploring that the original never tried to explore, nor could it. It's a Y7 TV show,
and
like, I can't imagine the jog in the TV show. I can't imagine that conversation in the TV show. I'm sure they could have wrote it, but you
could have softened it up and made some implications, maybe. But that to me is the clearest path of this story to be different and to be better in ways that it, like, because it can and it should. Iroh and Longfang are really good representations of that potential that, as you have noted, hopefully pays off in season 3. Hopefully we are vindicated for our hopes.
You know that Brooklyn Nine-Nine Holt saying vindication.
Yeah.
So I wrote on Twitter, like, I'm saving this meme for when Seven Havens drops and Korra is actually innocent. And my going to bat for Korra would be vindicated.
It's gonna happen in a flashback. And she's going to explain the story Kirk style, and we're going to be like, I get it. And then Chris is going to post. Just today, Camden was using a stick to point it, because he just points at everything now. He points, he says, is that? And I think he's trying to say, what's that? But just like 1,000 times a day. But he did it with a stick today, and Heather's like, oh, is that your laser pointer? And it's like, laser pointer is a bit of a misnomer. It's just a laser. The laser pointer is you. The Jake's like, awesome.
Yeah.
Great episode. Yeah, I got to go through that next. It's on my list next. That's the one where him and Kevin solve the crime that Holt's because Holt's dumb, or all of Kevin's friends think Holt's dumb. It's so good. Vindication.
But that's a great relationship of Kevin and Jake, because it's like they're so different. And when they I don't remember what movie it is, but they binge watch all of Nicolas Cage's movies, but he forgot one movie that's like some Oscar winning movie, and Kevin was pissed off at Jake for that.
Just the other day, for some reason, I saw the word danger, and I thought, actually, it's pronounced donger. Jackie Donger. Anyway, Chris, did you have any honorable I only had the one, and it was essentially my little toss-up between, like, Mechanist and Zuko at 5. So, did you have any HMs?
I kind of ranked pretty much all the other main characters. Toph was my number 6.
Okay, cool.
Then Suki. I think I just really love how the Kyoshi Warriors look in that outfit.
I thought about Suki, but she just didn't get quite enough screen time for me.
I thought she was going to have more.
I did too.
Yeah, and I love what they're doing with her and Sokka. Like, that reunion that they're going to have, hopefully, in season 3, most likely. I think it's going to pay off and be really good.
I hope so.
Yeah, she's great. Mm-hmm. I love her, Suki. Then Katara. I really love Katara season 1. This season, I think what happened was Katara's, like, in the original, her big, I think, character moments is in the desert. And so it's like she keeps that team together. She inspires Aang to keep his hope. And in this one, I feel like there's just not as much of that, like, keeping.
That's going to be one of my biggest negatives on this season. And it's not due to Katara specifically, but it does happen to be those moments that don't exist that also would help Aang's character, I think, that don't exist.
Yeah.
And so the actress herself, I thought, did fine enough, I guess. Yeah. But it feels neutered, kind of. Feels nerfed.
I think she improved in a lot of ways.
Her little interactions with Toph, that was very cute, very heartfelt.
Yes. Yeah. And then I'll probably put Longfang above Aang, but just having Aang near the bottom is...
You got Longfang that low?
I like Longfang, but I just like a lot of these other characters.
Okay.
I mean, yeah. I don't know.
Okay.
I didn't reassess this later hat, like the 7th or whatever.
Okay.
I definitely like Toph more. And I like Suki more.
Fair enough.
Longfang, I think, was a big improvement.
He was a big, was a great. Drastic change. I'd be curious to hear people's thoughts.
Yeah. But yeah, it's just kind of sad that Aang is decisively at the bottom. But I think that's story stuff mostly.
Yeah.
I don't think the story helped
with it. I mean, the story does.
I think he was like...
The writing doesn't do him any favors either. So he is the worst actor of the big group. And, you know, I'm sorry, kid. I have faith in you. You can get better. But the writing just doesn't do him any favors. He spends a lot of time mad at other people, which is not Aang. Like we get, there's a really bad imbalance of upset or whiny Aang to charming, likable Aang. It's a really, really bad balance. It is one of my biggest qualms. No, what's above qualm? Grievances? Umbrages with this season. He's way more whiny, upset kid than he is likable.
I think he has some good moments with Katara here and there. I like the training scene with Toph. I think that stuff was good. I think the more I think about it, the more... But I have to think about it. But the more I think about it, the more good stuff I can think about with them. But I think the overarching arc of Aang this season could have been improved.
It's
I think easily improved.
It's not. I do want to make a point is that it's not all the actors' fault. The dialogue and the narrative choices that they have made did not do him any favors whatsoever. Such is life. Cool. Hey, our lists were reasonably similar. which, you know, that's for better or worse, I guess. And let us know what you think. Let us know who your favorite and least favorite characters were. Try to let's stay positive on this one. We talked a lot about dying. Stay positive. Show us your favorite characters and why.
Yeah.
We'd love to see that. And yeah, hopefully some of these characters. Well, I guess I don't know what Long Fang's role would be. You know what might hurt Long Fang, though, is that the voice actor from the animated series, I don't remember the voice actor's name.
Clancy Brown.
Is that he sounds amazing, but he also, he also sounds like this actor here probably has a better voice for sounding non-threatening. Like that guy is intimidating out
Clancy
of the game.
Brown. Clancy Brown does not have a non-threatening voice. I can't even think of a role he has done that it didn't sound.
It's not inherently dangerous, but it's like a captivating voice. It's like when somebody talks about when you speak, everybody listens. That's that voice. And that's not usually like a person that I'm going to tell my deepest secrets to, you know?
Yeah.
The guy's in charge of shit. But this guy had a much more approachable. Anyway, yeah, tell us your favorites. Tell us why. We'd love to hear them. In the meantime, my name's Sean. That's my friend Chris Ford, a.k.a. The Objective Geek. And somewhere LeBron has decided where he's going to go, and everything's back in order, and it's going to be great.
He's taking too long. Get this over with.
The only issue I have with that for him with any team is that it is preventing all of these competing teams from, like, the next thing, right? He's hampering the other teams that don't win his services. And that does kind of suck for those teams.
No, he might just be holding up like what, 10 million in cap space? I forget what his, I think the veteran man is maybe 5, I forget. But
it is like 5 or 6 that they could offer. And then the teams that had the exceptions to get him up to like 15 million for a season, I think have kind of fallen out of contention. It's like Golden State, San Antonio, maybe the Nuggets. There's 3 or 4 that had trade exceptions or something to get up to 15, but none of those seem to be the front runners at this point. But so maybe it's not impacting him as much if they only have veteran minimum money and that's who he's looking at anyway. I don't know. We'll see. And in the meantime, leave your comments, likes, thumbs up, positive reviews, all that stuff. We appreciate it all. Thanks for watching. We will see you next time when we'll be, let me think about this, watching the movie. Next time, right?
Yeah. Holy crap.
We'll be watching the movie. It'll be great. So it might be a day late.
About $1 short.
Yep. We'll talk to you guys later. Have a good one.